All the members of the dog family, the Canis clan, have what we might call different accents. This means, for example, that Russian forest wolves don't sound like North American timber wolves, and African wild dogs sound very little like Australian dingoes. A team at Cambridge University's Zoology Department has been analyzing the sound spectrum of howls from various members of the dog family to identify their unique signatures. Arik Kirschenbaum is lead author of their study published in Behavioral Processes, and we called him up to find out more about it. Welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you.
So you've been looking into wolf talk. What did you set out to find when you began this investigation?
So we've known for a while that you can detect differences in wolf howls by ear. But we did want to get away from this subjective interpretation because, of course, we don't know whether the cues that we're picking up on as humans are the same cues that are being detected and interpreted by the animals themselves. So we went out to measure similarity and difference quantitatively and objectively without the interference of our human perception.
So what were you looking for in this research and what did you find?
We were looking to see whether different wolf subspecies and different wolf populations have howling behavior that is distinctly different from each other. So whether you can tell the difference between a North American wolf and a European wolf merely by listening to their howls. We collected several thousand howls from wolf populations around the world, mostly captive animals from zoos, but also some animals in the wild. We collected recordings of different subspecies of gray wolves. Red wolves, coyotes, jackals, dingoes. And we also scanned YouTube for videos of domestic dogs howling as well. So we assembled these all into a database and then put them through mathematical algorithms that extracted details on the howls themselves and then performed a comparison between them to measure their similarities and differences.
Now, this is really getting interesting because I'm imagining that you're able to both sort out a bit of geography and subspecies this way.
Yes, well, what we found was, first of all, that the computer came back and told us that there were 21 distinct types of howls. And this was across the full range of all of the wolf subspecies and other species and coyotes and jackals and dogs as well.
Arik, play a couple of these wolf howls for me and tell me how you were able to quantify the differences.
All right, well, this is the howl of a Mackenzie Valley wolf or a northwestern wolf. So this is a species that occupies the northwestern United States and Canada and the Rocky Mountains. And to compare that, this is the howl of a red wolf, which is a much smaller species from the southeastern United States. Well, the first thing that stands out is that the larger wolves have a much flatter, much more constant pitch, lower pitch, whereas the smaller animal, the red wolf, howls in a much more warbling way, going up and down in pitch, rising and falling.
Well, you can hear a difference. How do you quantify the difference?
So the way that we quantified it was to extract the frequencies of the howls as the howl progresses, whether the frequency rises, falls, or stays constant. And then we could compare every set of howls that we have recorded. And that essentially gives a number to how different two frequency modulated tones are. And we then pass that to another algorithm, which clusters these howls into groups that are similar to each other and different from every other howl.
Talk to me about the differences. What, in your view, makes up for a dialect?
So once we had established the 21 different howl types, what we did is we looked at the way those howl types were used by different populations. So some species and subspecies would make a lot of use of certain howl types and would neglect others. In addition, some species make wide use of all of the different howl types and are very varied in their repertoire. And in that sense, they represent, if you like, a fingerprint for each population and for each subspecies.
So without ever seeing these animals, one could identify them.
Yes, given enough recordings of the animals in a particular area, you would be able to identify which subspecies they're most similar to just from the way that they use the different howl types.
What about hybrids? To what extent can you use your technique to identify distinct populations or subspecies or incidents of interbreeding?
So the entire genus of Canis is a bit of a genetic mishmash. Most species can interbreed with each other. So it's really more a one large species than a collection of separate species. Now, when we look at reintroduction programs for the red wolf, which was driven extinct in the wild in the middle of the last century in the southeastern United States, and they found that one of the major problems with this reintroduction was that the wolves were hybridizing with coyotes that had come in after the red wolf became extinct and essentially taken over their niche. When we looked at the howling behavior of red wolves and the howling behavior of coyotes, and also the howling behavior of the eastern timber wolf, which is a smaller subspecies of gray wolf that occupies the northeastern United States, we found that the howl-type fingerprint of the red wolf was intermediate between that of the northeastern wolf and the coyote. So there is some indication that the red wolf could have a genetic past that places it between those two species. And it could also mean that we could use some of these behavioral indicators to measure the degree of mixing of populations.
So you've established that there are these wolf dialects. Where do you go from here?
Well, if we can use these kinds of techniques to identify different howls in different behavioral contexts, then we may be able to use the howling to develop techniques for reducing conflict between wild predators and humans by playing back the appropriate howls. But in this case, it would be extremely important to make sure that you play back a howl that says, "Don't come near here, we're a strong and aggressive pack," and not a howl that says, "Come over here, we found some interesting food and we're going to eat it."
Arik Kirschenbaum is a research fellow at the University of Cambridge's Department of Zoology and lead author of the study Disentangling Canid Howls Across Multiple Species and Subspecies, recently published in Behavioral Processes. Arik, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
My pleasure.